Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are going to be talking about the energy sector and more the oil stocks as we are chatting right now with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. Also writes the Eye on Energy, which is a free report that strictly looks at the fundamentals and the data points for the energy sector broadly. Now, Joseph, I want to spend more time talking about companies because, well, quite frankly, oil continues to be volatile, but the companies, they're just entering the earnings season, reporting Q1 earnings, and broadly, everyone's expecting good earnings to be coming out of these companies because of the fact that the energy price was higher, even in the face of higher inflation. All the companies we've even talked to in the energy sector seem to be building cash, paying off debt. Things seem to have gone pretty well for them. So far, we only have Cenovus that has reported Q1 earnings. Overall, these earnings were pretty strong. Break down what caught your eye within Cenovus's Q1 earnings, please.
Yeah, Cenovus reported some fabulous, free funds flow, $1.8 billion, up from $1.1 billion in Q4, and up from $594 million in Q1 of 2021. So a big, big increase. They're paying down debt. It was $13.9 billion in Q1 of 21. It's now $11.7 billion. But net debt, because they're building up cash, has gone from $13.34 billion in Q1 of 21 to $8.4 billion in now. And their target is to get that down to about $4 billion. So they're really moving quickly to get the debt to where they want it. And once they do, then free funds flow will be allocated, some to growth, some to debt repayment. But the biggest chunk of it is probably going to go to shareholder returns, which means regular dividends. And they tripled the regular dividend to 42 cents paid quarterly. And they're going to pay extraordinary or special dividends and also stock buybacks as long as it's below what they perceive as their NAV. So right now, they have been doing quite a bit of stock buybacks. One thing that I did notice, though, was production, upstream production in Q1 was 798,600 BOEs a day, but that's down from Q4 numbers of 825,300. Most of that was because of asset sales, but it's up 4% from Q1 of 21. Remember, they did the Husky deal, so they're the comparables, include the Husky numbers, but they did do some asset sales, so they get rid of non-core assets. The big thing for them is downstream throughput is increasing. The Superior plant, it will be on by the end of the year. It's being rebuilt. That'll help, and that takes heavy oil from Canada, and goes down on the Enbridge mainline, and they talked about that in the conference call this morning. And they're looking at the east coast of Canada and going over decisions there related to potential expansions and bringing on more production going forward. One of the other notable things from the conference call was that they're getting fabulous prices for Liwan, the offshore China production, and they're looking at potentially contracting some more gas there at probably what they say are the highest netbacks in the company.
Well, Joseph, I'm curious to get your take on what the best use of some of these free cash flows are for companies, because obviously there's been a big movement to pay down debt, and the industry as a whole was a little bit over-leveraged a couple of years back, so these higher prices have allowed a lot of companies to pay down debt, but some are doing share buybacks, some are doing increasing their dividends, and some are looking at acquisitions. I know it's kind of case by case, but overall, what's your disposition? Would you rather see them pay down their debt and be debt-free? Would you rather see them do a bigger dividend to attract those institutional or larger, players, or would you like to see them doing the share buybacks? What has your interest in these companies as they have these bigger free cash flows at present?
Yeah, my first desire is for them to have balance sheets that can withstand lower prices. In other words, if we go into recession, these commodity prices are very robust. There's a war premium in there for what's going on in Ukraine. If you recall today, Russia cut off Poland and Bulgaria from getting natural gas because they wouldn't pay in rubles. So they've kind of upped the economic warfare against the EU and NATO and said that, if they don't get paid the way they want, then they're going to cut off others. Germany has got an agreement with Gazprom, which is the Russian natural gas producer, to pay in euros, and the sanctions allow them to. And then they go to Gazprom Bank, they take the euros, convert it to rubles, and pay Gazprom. So there is ways around it for some countries like Germany, which is particularly vulnerable because they get over 50% of their natural gas from Russia. But the first thing, as I said, then would be to pay down debt and be ready to handle lower commodity prices. Because if you look at the long-term cycle, as mentioned in the Synovus call, the average price for the last 20 years might be $50 for WTI. So we're at the high end, and their concern is that we will swing back down again, and that they want to be able to handle that vulnerability in their modeling and their decision making for expansion of new production. So my view would be, one, debt repayment. Two, I think the security of supply issue, and boards of directors are now being pressured to look at where can we grow our production and also meet our commitments to the environment and spend money on those things, and then allocate maybe a third of the capital free funds flow to shareholder returns. So instead of the high profile commentary that going back just a few months ago that, hey, all the free funds flow should be going to shareholders either through dividends, special dividends, or stock buybacks. I think now you're seeing more of a decision making where a third goes maybe to pay down debt to the point where it's minuscule and under 1 year, maybe even under 1.5 year of free cash flow. Second, that you spend money on the environmental requirements that you need to get to your goals, 2035 and 2050, net zero, and then also to grow your production. So make the decisions where you can grow production at much lower commodity prices than today, and then the rest going to dividends. Some of the E&P companies have said to me that because of the volatility in the sector, for them to go and have a regular dividend, and then at some point, if we go into a low commodity price, having to cut it, they're looking at only having special dividends and stock buybacks rather than having the commitment and then having to, you know, reverse that commitment if they do regular dividends. So we're seeing a lot more, change in terms of the board and senior management's, game plan because of what's happened in Europe. And I think that's a wise decision. I think security of supply, especially with what Russia did today with Poland and Bulgaria, definitely moves that to the forefront for companies and boards. And you've seen President Biden do a 180 where, you know, one minute he's beating up the industry and, you know, and wanting to move to away from fossil fuels. And now he's saying, you know, please, bring on more production. We'll allow you access to drill on federal lands. And, please don't pay do as much stock buybacks and dividends. You know, please grow production so we have security of supply. So, you now also have seen, I think, 17, 18 Republican governors put pressure on the Biden administration to reverse their stance on the XL pipeline. So there's a lot of moving parts here on this security of supply, which I think are going to be positive for the Canadian industry.
What about the cost aspect here, Joseph? I mentioned it on the intro, but inflation is hitting the bottom line of a lot of companies. That is also impacting energy companies, but they've had higher prices to offset that inflation. How closely are you watching costs, and where do you think costs are, I guess, a bit more set for some producers?
Yeah, the biggest increases are going to be, employees' wages, and those are going to have to go up to attract the people, especially to the service side of the sector, to the drilling crews, service rig crews, and to the fracking crews, and then to spend the money on training them so that they'll be available. And then, of course, the other related, is the issue of margins, and the industry hasn't been making adequate margins to justify bringing on more equipment. So in Q1, we're going to see very good comparisons for the E&P companies, as we did for Synovus. But for the margins for the service sector, because costs have been going up so much faster than the price increases, we're probably going to see lower margin comparisons for the service sector. But after breakup, starting, let's say, Q3, we're going to probably see significant price increases and tightening up in the industry. And talking to some of the fracking companies, they're all talking about being fully booked into Q4 and then Q1 of next year, and that price increases are being passed on. And I asked that same question yesterday from one of the E&P companies that I met that's a natural gas producer, and they said, yes, we are paying more starting later this year for the cost increases, because we need to have these companies and we want to make sure that we have the equipment available when we need it.
Joseph, I'd be curious to get your take on the oil services sector, just because, you know, we focus a lot on the producers, sometimes on the exploration companies, but there's the drillers, there's the pipeline companies, there's the processors. What out of the oil services sector, is there a particular niche that you have your eye on right now?
Well, I think the drillers and the tool producers stocks are pretty cheap here. Some of them are smaller cap, like Essential Energy and, you know, Total Energy, but we've seen some very good moves in Ensign, and we've seen big moves in Precision Drilling. Trican and Step have had big moves. So what you want to do is find those companies where the balance sheets are strong, where the stocks have not really done as much as they can. And as you know, I've been in the bear camp and on the market as a whole, and we've seen some pretty nasty days, you know, 981 points down last Thursday, yesterday 809 points down. I think we're in the beginning of a major decline in the general markets. And if you have bad results, be it Meta, be it Boeing, be it Netflix, you're getting taken to the, you know, out to the out to the woodshed. And I think we're going to see more of that because we're still very early in the Q1 earnings season. And I think just showing Boeing today, you know, you're down 11% because your results were poor. I think we're going to see potentially much lower prices for the general market. And at some point, historically, even sectors that have done extremely strong fundamentals, they get taken to the woodshed as well. And I point out the semiconductors, which have massive pricing power. You know, there's shortages of chips for the autos. They're raising their prices like crazy. The ability to enter the industry is tough because the fabrication plants are in the, you know, $10 billion and the lead times are very long. So, you know, Taiwan Semiconductor, which has been, you know, a fabulous stock going up till, you know, late last year in November, and the same thing with Advanced Micro Devices, those stocks are down sharply, 50% from where they were at their highs. So, stocks can get beat up because the technology sector is getting beat up. They, you know, the NASDAQ is down in bear market territory, down more than 20%. So we're beginning to see that even companies with strong internal fundamentals are getting beat up because they were overvalued, and now they're getting, as margin calls go through, people sell what you can sell, not what you want to sell.
So Joseph, when it comes to your subscribers and when you're looking at these stocks, as Shad kind of said, there are a number of different areas that you can dive into in terms of energy stocks, either producers all the way down to explorers. Where are you focused now? It doesn't sound like you're being very aggressive.
No, I'm not. The names that we like, we're staying with, in the natural gas sector, international, the E&P companies that we like, service sector that we like, but we're not adding to positions. We're saying we will be waiting for the general market correction. And I'm looking just to, not to shock you, but I think the Dow potentially could go to 24,000, 25,000. So we're sitting today at, you know, the 33,000 level. You know, we're down from, you know, 37,000, but we still have a long way to go, I think, before this market. And so I think the next 2-3 months are going to be pretty nasty. Remember, the Fed is tightening. In early May, we're going to probably see a 50 basis point rise. We're also going to probably see that they're going to run down the balance sheet by $95 billion. So we're going from $120 billion injection every month a year ago to, to a $95 withdrawal. And the bottom line is that means we're losing about 10% of the liquidity, which to me is the reason why we're going to see a recession in the U.S. heading into, the coming quarters. And there's forecasts already coming that the first quarter GDP may be just 1%. So we're looking at, significant, erosion here that I'm thinking we need to be defensive and sit with cash for now. And then, you know, when we get to much lower prices, I think we're going to see some great buying opportunities across the energy sector, or be it the pipeline and infrastructure companies.
Joseph, I know that you've favored natural gas companies over the oil companies in the recent past, really over the last half year, and there is some exciting growth in natural gas, but would there be anything after that corrective move you just laid out that would get you more animated to get more heavy into the oil stocks versus the nat gas stocks?
My favorite are the natural gas stocks. I think that, you know, natural gas has proven to be the commodity that's going to be needed until we get into a sufficient number of renewables over the next 10, 20 years. So, you know, the natural gas needs, you know, via LNG, you know, we've got LNG Canada, you know, coming on in 25 and maybe doubling the, going from 2 to 4 BCF. We have a number of other projects that are in the queue that are moving towards FID and environmental permitting. So I think that Canada will have an export industry to the West Coast. And I think also over time, we may see more pipelines go to the south and more access points, you know, in the Gulf of Mexico to export Canadian gas to Europe or to Asia. So I think that, you know, the natural gas is the one that will have the biggest volume increases, because right now, let's say we're 14, 15 BCF a day in Western Canadian Basin. You know, you add in 4 BCF a day from LNG Canada, you add in, you know, from the other projects that have been, in, you know, that people have talked about, there could be another 3 or 4. So if you add 8 BCF before the end of the decade onto a 14, 15 BCF current production base, that's a pretty good, healthy expansion. You won't see that percentage growth in the oil sector.
Yeah, very interesting, Joseph. Who knows, right, where some of this is going to go because of the headline-driven markets that we have had. And quite frankly, it still seems like there is a bit of a premium in the oil price because of the war that's ongoing in Ukraine, but seems to have dissipated a little bit, just like all the markets starting to move on from that war, even though it's still going on. So when it comes to the stocks, though, I think watching some of these earnings and seeing what companies are forecasting always is important, albeit they are going to show some pretty good earnings from Q1. Joseph, thank you as always for your time, buddy. We'll follow up next month and we'll see where the oil price and where these stocks are trading then. Thanks for your time, Joseph. Have a great rest of your week.
My pleasure.